Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Michael Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I'm just a dude.
So today's topic is First Amendment and the right to free speech. This was suggested by listener Jordan Roberts. He emailed us on the courtappointedpodcast@gmail.com email address and suggested this topic. And we thought it would be a good one to bring up and discuss today. Are you free to speak, Tommy?
I agree. Hear, hear.
So the right to free speech is covered under the First Amendment to the Constitution. There's several rights which are enumerated in the First Amendment. The main one, though, is the right to free speech. Well, there's not the main one, but that's the one we're going to talk about today.
Well, you know, you hear people throw that around all the time, the right to free speech and everything, and there's a big thing made out of it. There's always some kind of trial going on because of it and everything. And yeah, while I'm familiar with it and I've heard of it mentioned and everything, I've never really taken the time to look at it until we were getting ready for this episode. And when you look at it, it's really very basic, very short, and I guess it's because of that shortness that it's left open to such interpretation.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire amendment just reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's it. It's not a great big long thing.
No. There's a lot of penumbras in there.
A lot of penumbras. But, you know, yeah, we're not concentrating on the religious one, but I mean, the main thing when the forefathers sat down and they wrote that, they're thinking, look, one of the reasons we came to this place was to get away from religious intolerance.
Right.
So the first thing we're going to say is, if you want to worship, you can worship. If you don't want to worship, you don't have to worship. Whatever you want to worship, you can worship. Go worship that tree over there if you want. Whatever you want to do, you can do, and nobody's going to say anything to you. And the other thing they wanted to guard against was what they were subject to over there, was you can't say anything bad about the government.
Right.
You know, you sit around and you say, you know, that king, he sucks. And next thing you know, the king says, off with his head, and it's off with your head. There's no say-so because you said something that the king didn't like.
Yeah.
So they came over here and said, we don't want that. If the thing that this is established on is the right to free speech, because we want people, if our government is not doing their job, we want to be able to have a discussion about that and to voice our grievances to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was their intent at the time. I mean, I really think it was really kind of basic. And there's no way that you could write something to cover every situation that's ever going to come up. And the other thing you can't predict is the changes in the future.
You don't think the framers had the comment section of YouTube in mind whenever they were drafting the...
No, or Twittering or tweeting or Instagramming or whatever the other sources they are out there, Snapchatting. There's so many of them. Who even knows?
Yeah, you're right, though. The right to freely express yourself and talk about the government and how much displeasure you have with them or they're not doing a good job, that is one of the major underpinnings of democracy in general, because without freedom of speech, there would be a complete chilling effect on people's right to speak up about the government. And the government could do whatever they want. And also, government shall not restrict the press or something like that. Is that in the First Amendment as well?
Well, the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press.
Right. And that's another thing that goes hand in hand is that you can't regulate the press because the press is sometimes called the fourth branch of the government because they report what's going on with the government. They're almost like a watchdog. So they kind of go hand in hand with the right to free speech is the right to the press as well. So,
well, that's what you think about in governments where they control everything the press reports, like in Russia, the newscasts and the papers and everything are all controlled by the the government and they tell you what you can print and what you can't print. Right. And you don't print anything bad about Putin because Putin don't like that. He will let you know real quick.
Yeah, he'll ride in on a horse without a shirt and judo throw you across the room.
That's right. Or he'll slip you, was that they did to their own spy there or something like that?
Oh, the radiation?
Yeah, slipped him radiation.
What was the name
They don't
of that?
Mess around over there. You don't want to mess around with those guys. That's just like the Russians that didn't get to go to the Olympics. There are no winners there because they're still in Russia.
Sorry to all of our Russian listeners.
I guess the Cold War is over. You can't say anything bad about Russia. Who can we say something bad about?
Nobody.
That's right, because it would violate our freedom of speech if we said something bad, right? I can't say anything bad about anybody.
Well, you can say
we're talking about freedom of speech, and I can't say anything bad about anybody?
You can
what
say
kind
bad.
Of podcast is this?
You can say bad things about people, but they can't be just kind of baseless generalizations like that. Like, that's not cool. Russia, I mean, sure, Russia has some things that are good.
My opinion is I would not want to live in Russia.
I share that opinion.
And I'm allowed to express my opinion, and you can't do anything about it.
That's true. I can't.
Because it's an opinion. That's one of the things that is a defense, right?
Right. There are certain limitations on freedom of speech, though. One of the classic ones that's always brought up, and I always just like this term, is fighting words. Fighting words stems from this case called Chaplinsky, a Supreme Court case. I think it was back in 48 or something like that, 48 or 49. 1948 or 49, that is, for all you 1800 files out there. And basically,
was Lodowick involved?
There was no Lodowick in this one.
Damn, I like him.
It was some guy named Chaplinsky.
I gotta look him up sometime. He's got to have a relative somewhere.
Who, Lodowick?
Yeah,
Lodowick fan club.
Yeah, Lodowick. A lot of us. There's a lot of us fanning for him.
But fighting words are not protected. These are words that are generally used to incite hatred or violence. They include anything that might be lewd, obscene, profane, libelous. Their very utterance inflicts injury and tends to incite immediate breach of the peace. So they're words that basically they bring no value to the table.
Those things are constantly changing and evolving. In the 1920s, if you were to say some of the things that are now broadcast over public airwaves, they would probably say, oh, well, that's obscene. You can't say that. Someone arrest that man. And now you got people just saying this stuff right out loud.
That's true.
I mean, that's one of the things that is so hard about this, I think, is things are constantly changing. When are you protecting people and when are you limiting people? And it's constantly open to interpretation. There's no black and white here. Everything is gray.
Well, that's true. There's one famous Supreme Court case, and it was discussing pornography. And because there was a state law which censored the ability to show pornography or at theaters or something like that. And I'll never forget one of the justices, I think it was Justice Stewart. I can't remember if that was this one or not. Anyway, his famous line.
We'll just say it is. Yes. Maybe nobody will fact check.
Yeah. no one will fact check this.
Who cares? But, one of them guys.
They were in one of his, in part of the opinion, talking about whether or not it was pornography or whatnot. He goes, well, I don't know if this, or what was he said?
You can't give a quote that you don't know.
He's. It's funny though. He said, I don't know. I know pornography when I see it. Like that was how he was going to be able to define.
I've reviewed a lot.
Yeah. That was how he was going to define what pornography was. I don't know how I can define it, but I know it when I see it. That was the basic utterance he was trying to get out. And he actually wrote that in one of his opinions.
When his wife caught him watching a stag film, he said, I'm doing research, honey. I'm doing research. I haven't seen it yet. And that stag film had nothing to do with deer or breeding or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, there might have been some breeding. I don't know. Well, I can tell you this. When they first started having those discussions about pornography, they never imagined where the internet has gone today.
That's absolutely true.
I mean, you can't control it. It's out there. And I mean, I think we've given up on that, haven't we? I mean, pretty much there's no such thing as pornography anymore. I mean, it's all there on the internet. You can get to it from your home if you want. You can go home and get on your computer and look at it. There's people uploading it from their home, making their own and putting it on there. How do you ever regulate or stop that? I mean, at this point, other than if you were to set something up in a public street and do it or something like that, but in the internet public?
Yeah. The genie's kind of out of the bottle with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there are certain countries. I think China has certain laws where they actually don't allow certain websites to be visited by their internet servers. So they have the ability to kind of cut it off or head it off the pass. So you can't even get to those type things.
Oh, it's everywhere. I don't think they could build the mechanism to to filter it all out. I mean, you try to do a Google search on something and you punch the wrong key and something's going to pop up you're not even looking for.
Yeah.
How does that get on there?
You don't hit the "I feel so lucky" on that one.
Somebody's getting lucky. I don't know.
That's true. One of the other interesting things about talking about free speech that I always like to talk about when I talk about free speech is...
Do you do that often? Do you have public gatherings and talk about free speech?
Yeah.
That's what free speech is all about, public gatherings and everybody talk about free speech.
I wax sophistically or sophistically or whatever that word is.
You wax sofas.
We'll have to edit that out. Anyway, but it's in regard to prior restraint. And court cases have come out from the Supreme Court that said prior restraint on freedom of speech is not allowed. So basically, if law that says you're not allowed to protest on this certain sidewalk or at a certain time, that's considered prior restraint of freedom of speech, and it's not allowed unless there's some sort of underlying public safety reason. So, you know, like you're not allowed to
block both sides because then people couldn't walk by safely.
Yeah. Or, yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, there has to be a reason behind it. You can't just say, no, we don't like the cause you're assembling for.
Right.
I mean, it's like when the Ku Klux Klan gets the ability to have a parade and go down the streets. I would say the majority of the citizens probably are not in favor of that. But if they go through the proper procedure, you have to allow them to do it because they're expressing their beliefs, whether you like them or not.
Yeah, there was a case, I think it was back in the 60s. I didn't look this up for this episode, but it was Bradenburg, and it involved the Ku Klux Klan, and they wanted to have a right to a parade or something like a ceremony or something like that, and they weren't allowed to do it, and they filed a lawsuit, and the Supreme Court said they were allowed to, I believe, in that case, which, you know, is probably the right decision because we don't want to have, we want everybody to be able to do their own thing.
Well, it gets right back to what our forefathers were trying to fight against, is that the government decides what is okay to talk about and what isn't okay to talk about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, short of directly threatening people and things like that, you can pretty much talk about anything.
Yeah.
Like, along those lines, there was a case there, well, it's not really a case, it was in the media, about Leslie Jones, the lady from Saturday Night Live that just was in the female version of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, she was also the Olympic super fan. She was everywhere.
Oh, yeah. She was at the women's beach volleyball, just going nuts out there screaming for him.
She got me pretty pumped up.
Yeah. But when the movie came out, for whatever reason, this guy named Milo, I can't get Grenier right. How am I going to get this one right? Milo Yiannopoulos. And he evidently is some kind of a internet sensation guy that he's a conservative commentator, and he is also serves as, but Breitbart, what is, I've never heard of Breitbart. And I'm probably not saying that right. It's some kind of magazine or online magazine or something like that.
I think so. Yeah. I see articles posted periodically from it. I think it may be some sort of conservative magazine or something like that.
Well, that's what he's very conservative, and he evidently has a very large following. And he makes a habit of harassing people who come out with very liberal views and stuff like that. And I don't know what his complaint is with Leslie Jones other than just that he didn't like the movie or something like that. But him and all his people bombarded her. And so Twitter banned him from using Twitter, bombarded her on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they said all kinds of bad things. I didn't see the things, but they said some were racist and some were misogynistic and, you know, lots of just very bad things. It wasn't just, we didn't like your performance, and we wish that you would go away. You know, it was much, much worse than that.
We're very unhappy that you crossed the streams at the very beginning of the Ghostbusters film and didn't wait for the...
You've ruined the whole genre. It was meant to have men play those roles, and having women do that was just very disturbing. I may never sleep again. So he was upset with that, and so he let her have it, and so they banned him from Twitter, and he says that violated his rights to free speech.
Well, that works really well into where I was going next with my next topic, is because while we do have freedom of speech, the freedom of speech, it basically has to be some sort of government actor. Just because you post something on like Facebook or Twitter or something like that doesn't mean you have right to freedom of speech on those different vehicles, because they're private entities and they can regulate their own pursuant to their own terms and conditions and whatever they want. So the whole freedom of speech thing, when you're saying like, you know, you can't say that. Why can't I say that on Facebook? Well, it's because you're not talking with a government. You're talking with Facebook. So if it was like, you know, some sort of government website, then you get closer to an argument where you're allowed to say those kinds of things, or some sort of government forum, like a, you know, a public meeting or something like that. But because it's a private entity like that, this whole freedom of speech thing doesn't fly.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said there. It's a private entity, therefore they can make whatever rules they want. The only thing, it kind of goes against everything that Twitter stood for. When they first came out, they said that they were the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party. And that was the way they identified themselves. And they adopted harsher guidelines on abusive speech, and they didn't do it until 2015, following the online harassment of several feminists in the gaming industry.
Was that Gamergate?
Yeah. They said that they didn't, you know, they had to put that out there because it was just unjustified in what they were doing. But it said that it had originally, it said it has explicitly concluded that it was to be a platform for democracy rather than civility. But then as it progressed, it's just like everything else, things are constantly changing. The lines are constantly moving. So then they had to come up and redress that again. And they actually put together a whole group to help control that. They created a trust and safety council composed of 40 organizations that include the Anti-Defamation League, the Internet Watch Foundation, and the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. Hmm. And that council provides input on Twitter's automated products, policies, and programs that monitor hate speech and other forms of abuse. Well, the council was immediately dubbed Orwellian as they were put together, and that they oversee everything. But here's the main flaw in their whole procedures. Mostly, the only way they punish anyone or it comes to their attention is by people reporting them.
Right.
They don't put any software in place that can cut it off at the root before it ever gets going. It's when somebody reports you, then they act on it. So it's all up to judgment. And that comes down to dollars and cents to actively go out and develop the software and put these things in place that would help monitor that stuff. Would cost money, and yeah, they're there for to make a profit.
Well, there's another website called Reddit, and they kind of had a similar thing. I don't think it was to that degree, but Reddit was supposed to be just they call it the front page of the internet, and they're supposed to be completely unmoderated and everything like that. But the problem with that is you have to have some sort of moderation with these things, because it devolves into chaos if you don't have some sort of safeguards in there. I feel like, you know, the website 4chan, if you've ever gone to that website, that's a scary, scary place. You don't want to go there.
Well, I mean, the whole thing that, you know, once again, when the forefathers set it up, who could have imagined the internet and what would come about? Facebook, right. Things like that. You know, a lot of your free speech laws have to do with, you know, when you've crossed that line, it has to do with face-to-face communication with somebody, like you've threatened that person or something like that. And it has to be a real and live threat.
Right.
All right. If you're on Facebook and you write on your wall and send it out to everybody that you're connected with, I'm not really a real good Facebook user, so I'm not sure I'm describing that correctly. But, you know, and it's something that people might not like. I wish they would drop a bomb on this person or this country or that country, something like that. There's really nothing you can do about that, because it's not directly at anyone. You don't have the means to do it or anything else. Do you like that kind of talk going on? No. I don't know why people need to do that stuff. Why can't we all just get along?
I always think it would be interesting to say, like, these different things that people put on the internet. I bet they wouldn't say that to the person's face if they were sitting directly across
from them. Oh, absolutely not.
Like, that's the whole thing. It's like they have this anonymous forum where they feel like they can just throw this out there.
Well, that's the whole problem with texting and emails and everything else. You're not face-to-face, and you say things that you would not ordinarily say. If you had to stand face-to-face and say some of the things that people have said on text or emails, it wouldn't happen.
No.
You wouldn't do that. You'd think about that person's, how it's going to affect them, everything. I mean, all that cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Cyberbullying is worse. When I was a kid, there wasn't such thing as cyberbullying. I mean, yeah, somebody might push you around and take your lunch money or something when you're at school. But when you went home, that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Not in cyberbullying. They follow you everywhere. They're with you wherever you go. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, especially if you have a phone. You're carrying it with you. Did you see the article? It's been a while ago, I think. It was about Kurt Schilling and his daughter. she got some sort of scholarship to go somewhere and play softball, and she posted on her Instagram, and all these internet trolls came out and just like started saying all these horrible things to her. Well, Kurt Schilling basically took some offense at that, and he tracked some of them down and actually filed lawsuits against them. And she was underage. Mm. And some of the things they said were of a kind of a sexual nature. So I think, you know, some of these people might actually get in some serious trouble for what they said because the nature of what the way they said it and who they said it to. But that's always like one of those internet dreams. Like, you know, if somebody's talking bad to you on the internet and you're like, I want to go show up at their door.
You'd like to be able to track them down.
Yeah.
If you could. There was a case I read about earlier today when I was doing research, getting here, because I'm always properly prepared.
You are. I noticed you are wearing glasses today. You look very studious and very prepared.
Well, I have to read my notes and I can't see very well anymore. I can see across the room. I just can't see what's right in front of me. There was a police officer in New York. His last name, I think, was Vale, V-A-L-L-E. And he was writing these things on Facebook about how he was going to kidnap women, and he was going to hold them hostage and torture them and eventually eat them. And so when all this became known to his police department, they moved in and arrested him. And, you know, they got how these stories going about the cannibal cop.
Yeah.
And the trial went all the way. I think it went to the state Supreme Court, and they acquitted the guy. I mean, even though he had all these things on there, they said it was a fantasy world. And yes, a lot of people could see it. And yes, it was disturbing. But he really had no way of doing this. And he showed no inclination towards doing it. It was all just a gross fantasy world that he had created and put there out on Facebook.
I wonder, did he get his job back?
No, they didn't. They didn't hire him back.
Yeah,
I think they'd have had a public relations difficulty there.
Yeah,
don't worry. We're on the way. We're going to send the cannibal cop to take care of you.
We're going to put him down in the morgue, maybe. Maybe not a good idea.
What happened to the evidence? We can't find the body. I'm just finishing lunch.
Valley's been eating that guy's arm again, or Vale, or whatever. However you say his name.
The stuff that goes on out there and is talked about and people that are harassed, and it never, I mean, the worst that happens is you get banned from Twitter, you know, or something like that. And these are, I mean, you are inflicting emotional distress on people and you are inflicting pain on people and you are disrupting their life and things like that. But that doesn't seem like anything can be done about it because everything is protected as, oh, it's freedom of speech. It's not freedom of speech when you impose yourself on somebody else.
Right. Well, if you make a false statement against somebody, and this kind of leads into the next kind of topic we're talking about today, defamation, libel, and slander, which was suggested by Lissa Parsons. Lissa Parsons. Yeah, on her Facebook page.
It's like Melissa without the male.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember.
You always get the easy ones. I never get easy ones.
I cherry pick the easy names.
Golly. I got to pick the topic next time.
This next topic was brought by John Smith.
John Smith?
No, but Lissa Parsons suggests this, the difference between defamation, libel, and slander. But so defamation is when people publish false statements about somebody to a third party. So they basically say something that's not true about you to somebody else. And that's considered defamation.
So defamation is a catch-all that covers libel and slander.
Right. Now, there used to be kind of more of a split between it at common law, where libel was written and slander was printed. But really, most jurisdictions have kind of done away with that, and it just falls under the basic catch-all.
That's because no one talks to each other anymore. That's Everything's right. written because it's on the Facebook or the text or the internet or an email.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nobody ever talks to anybody.
I know. It's just all, it's all electronic.
Yeah. That's why it's gotten out of hand. There should be a law.
So the defamation can be like communicating a false statement that harms the reputation of an individual person, a business, or a group. Not only does there have to be kind of a false statement, but there has to be some kind of actual damages or harm. And that's something that can be oftentimes really hard to prove in a defamation case.
So like if you just said, don't go to that business, they suck.
Yeah.
They can't get you for defamation.
Probably not. No, I mean, that's kind of, also that's an opinion too. So,
right. But, so an opinion protects you.
Yeah.
You say they don't stock the best supplies there. Don't buy your hardware there. They stock cheap stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an opinion, too, I would say.
Well, I'm not coming up with any good examples. I would leave you with the examples.
It's harder than it looks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if this is a restaurant, you say, oh, don't go to that restaurant. When I was in there eating, I saw a rat run under the table and eat a piece of cheese and then run back into its hole. And then another rat came out that was a different rat because I could tell because it was a different color.
It was wearing a hat. It was Pizza Rat.
And he came out.
It was Pizza Rat. Came off the subway.
He came out wearing his hat, and he grabbed a piece of, he grabbed a slice of pie. Then he ran back into a hole. Like, if you go, if you start talking about, like, actual things like that that, you know, aren't true, which actually might lead to damages as well, because that would damage, obviously, a restaurant. Like, oh, if they have rats running around the restaurant, then I don't want to eat there. It's dirty. So, they're, you know, have to actually quantify that damage portion. So, like, you know, but if somebody came into, like, my law office and said, oh, yeah, I was in Meadows law office and I saw a rat, somebody'd be like, eh, oh, well.
Yeah, it was his next customer, his next client.
So,
sorry. We know the way you lawyers are.
Sorry to all my client listeners out there. So, but it depends. Like, the you have to show damages. That's always one of the things that you just, even though somebody might have said something, unless you have damages, it doesn't, it might not matter. So the old sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may, will never hurt me type thought.
What do you got when you got nine lawyers buried up to their necks in cement?
What?
Not enough cement. That just came to me. Sorry, bro.
It's our new lawyer section, lawyer joke section. Now, the one basic exception to there being damages is something called defamation per se. Have you ever heard of defamation per se when you were doing your research?
Well, per se.
Per se, per so.
That means that there are presumed damages just for the fact of what you said.
Exactly.
There's of course it's exactly. You think I'd have said it and not known?
I don't know.
I'm always at least half right.
Half the time.
That's right.
Half the time I'm right all the time.
Half the time I'm that's right. Half the time I'm completely right.
So the four classic defamation per se examples are a criminal offense, a loathsome disease, matter incompatible with business, trade, profession, or office, or serious sexual misconduct. So those are kind of the classic four where it's such a horrible thing to say about somebody that the damages are presumed. So you don't even have to show damages in the court. So
just if you make that accusation, unless you can prove it.
Well, the truth is always an absolute defense.
Not always.
Not always?
Not always.
When is it not?
When there's malicious intent.
Well, you're saying that the truth is a defense to malicious intent?
That's right.
Or the truth is not a defense to malicious intent?
Correct.
Well, can you give me an example of this?
I could. Noonan versus Staples.
Okay.
In the case of Noonan versus Staples, Noonan was a traveling salesman for the Staples organization, and he was making a general practice to turn in falsified expense accounts. Well, eventually he was caught and fired, and the Staples circulated a memo to all their personnel saying Noonan was fired because he was not following our procedures on properly turning in expense accounts. Well, he turned around and filed a defamation suit against him. Even though it was true that he did do that, he said they had no reason to do that and they'd never done it before. And so they were malicious in putting that around, and it did nothing for the public good. The courts agreed with him and they awarded him damages.
When was this case?
It was around there. I'd have to look that up. I read all about it. It was a highly publicized case.
Really? Yeah. I've always thought truth is an absolute defense to defamation.
That is normally the case. However,
I guess if it serves no public purpose, I could see why that might be the reason for it.
I'm searching here. I have found it.
I guess if you can show that you do anything with malicious intent, there's probably not any really good defense to it.
Yeah, well, it doesn't give the year of when it was, but it does say that it was there. It says, judge says malice trumps truth for private citizens. So now, it did happen to be that it was in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts does have stricter law along going with malice. So that may have been part of the reason.
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing talking about malice, because when you're dealing with defamation with regards to a famous person, there's actually a higher standard. It's not just enough with the famous person to generally say something about them which is not true and causes them damages. Actually, there's a requirement showing of actual malice. So the actual malice is defined as knowledge of the falsity or reckless disregard for the truth. And that comes from the New York Times versus Sullivan Supreme Court case. So there's a higher standard for celebrities and public officials.
You're allowed to criticize them and say bad things about them, basically.
For the most part, yeah. Unless there's some sort of, you know, super malicious intent.
Right.
So.
And as well, we should be able to.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you do.
That's what they get for being in the public.
If you do anything with malicious intent, they just shouldn't be allowed to do it.
That's right. I mean, we have to put up with that being popular podcasters that we are. Somebody turns in a bad review and says, I don't like you. I don't think you do a good job. You know, that's just part of it. Okay. Thank you.
Nobody would ever say that.
No, they wouldn't say that. Now, what about the clause in there on substantial truth?
What are you talking about?
In other words, that you can also prove that, yeah, you might not be 100% right, but the majority of what you said was true. You just might have missed it a little bit.
What about that? In what context? Like in a case?
Yeah, in a case. Like, in other words, there was a case where someone accused a county official for misapplying funds.
Okay.
And that they had misspent $87,000. And this went in the paper. Well, that county official sued the paper because while he had misspent county funds, he did not misspend that much. He misspent $17,500.
Right.
So he felt that was it. Well, the ruling was he didn't win because substantially they were right, because the most important part of that was he was misappropriating funds.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he didn't win the defamation suit, even though they had the dollar amount wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just a strict thing that you have to have everything right. I mean, that seems kind of, and a lot of times these defamation cases, they are not winners. They're not cases you want to take. They're hard to win. The damages are always just so hard to prove. Like, it's just not an easy case. A lot of people come into an office like, I want to sue them for defamation. And you just don't want to do it.
A couple of them that I read about, that they're on opposite ends of the spectrum, but they cracked me up. They had one where the guy was being sued for defamation by his, I don't know if it was his ex-wife or ex-girlfriend, because he called her a dirty old whore. Well, so she sued him. He had told everybody he knows she's a dirty old whore.
Right.
So she sued him. Well, he said, well, I got proof. While we were in a committed relationship, she had an affair with another guy. Well, the judge ruled that if that was the only time she did it, that didn't make her a whore. It was just one time. So he was wrong. So he didn't. Now, if she'd done it three or four times, the judge might have ruled in his favor. But just once didn't make her a whore. So.
I can only imagine his opinion was, I don't know if there's a legal definition for what a whore is, but I know.
I'll know it when I see it. Is that how judges work? I know them when I see them. And then the other one was a shop that got busted in Hawaii, and the paper reported that they had gotten heroin and morphine and I don't know, LSD, three very powerful drugs were found at it. Well, the owner of the shop sued the newspaper for defamation because all they found there was marijuana. And marijuana was much more socially accepted and didn't bring the stigma right to his business that selling heroin and the other things that they supposedly listed would have brought. So the judge ruled in his favor, and he won that. Huh. Because they reported the wrong drugs being found. Yes, he was selling drugs, but they weren't those drugs.
The only thing I would say that might go against that was because, according to the federal government, those are all Schedule I narcotics. So you could say they all are kind of lumped together in the federal DEA guidelines, I believe.
We talked about when they came to the New World that part of it was they didn't want to have to they wanted to set up rules so it wouldn't be like in England. And that wasn't like entirely true right away. You couldn't criticize public officials at first. They would still get you for defamation. But the first case where that was changed was in 1733 with a John Peter Zinger. Zing. He went to trial for allegedly defaming the then New York governor. You're not going to believe what his name was.
Lodowick?
No, it wasn't Lodowick. That'd have been good. Bill Cosby.
Really?
His name, the New York governor in the 1700s, his name was Bill Cosby.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you'd think he accused him of handing out drugs and molesting women, but no, that wasn't what he accused him of. But he had said several things about him. Well, Benjamin Franklin persuaded a guy named Andrew Hamilton, well, now Alexander Hamilton, it was Andrew Hamilton, to defend him. He actually won because what he was saying was true. But before, it didn't matter.
Right.
It didn't matter if he was right. You criticized, that's all it had to be. You spoke out against your government.
Right.
So he defended him on the basis it was true. And from then on, Crown versus Zinger was the standard by which truth was a defense for the law.
Well, what year was that?
So now you've learned something. 1733.
Oh, that would be interesting, too, because that was before our Constitution as well. So that was some different kind of play with regards to...
The free speech thing wasn't even in there, but it was them developing the standards by which they wanted to be governed.
That's interesting. Shows kind of the basis of where the thought process was coming from. I had a defamation case where I was actually defending the person who was alleged to have defamed someone. And it was actually a 2-week jury trial. So if you're not an attorney, you wouldn't know, but a 2-week jury trial is a really long trial.
And they're all civil.
Yes.
They're all civil trials.
This was a civil trial.
That's right. Because that's all that defamation is. It's not a criminal trial.
Yes. It was a civil trial.
We learned that last week.
It was pretty much civil. There was some
disobedience.
Some raised voices. But this case went for 2 weeks and it was a jury trial. And one of the interesting defenses that we put out was that the person who had alleged they were defamed started basically kind of self-defamed themselves because they said, "Can you believe what this person said about me?" and went around and told all these other people like what this person allegedly had said about them.
So they were spreading rumors about themselves.
Essentially, yeah.
I'm going to make it even worse. Yeah. I'm going to tell everybody what he said about me. Then everybody's going to know what he said.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy, crazy set of facts, but... I'm not going any farther about that case because I don't want to be sued for defamation.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
You weren't defending the girl that went around telling everybody, "He called me a dirty old whore."
No, that was not one of my cases.
Okay. I didn't know if we crossed paths there on that information.
No, we did not.
Okay, good.
I saw in the news recently that Melania Trump, Donald Trump's wife.
Melania.
She had said that, I guess... Some newspaper had said that alleged that she was an escort or something previously, and Donald Trump's lawyers have threatened to sue them unless they retracted that. I saw that in the paper.
Yeah, I read something that said a lot of times the first step is to print a retraction. If you do say something or put something in print, that oftentimes if you print a retraction, a public retraction, that then you can't be awarded damages because they've removed the damages that you suffered. Or else you will get a lesser amount.
Well, I guess you're kind of capping them or mitigating their damages because you're...
Right. Coming out and say, we didn't get that right.
Yeah. My bad. She wasn't a hooker.
I missed that.
She wasn't really an escort. I was just joshing you.
Yeah, it just seemed like it.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that about wraps us up for this part of it. So I think we should probably move on to... Legal briefs.
You jumped me on that. I wasn't ready.
I know. Well, I think maybe for this legal briefs, since you did so much research.
Legal briefs. I had to get that back in.
Since you did so much research for this, you should test me on my legal brief knowledge from all your notes.
That'd be interesting. Well, does that mean you didn't do any? Did you not look some up?
No, I have my standard ones here. We'll do a quid pro quo. I'll give you one, and then you give me one.
All right. Well, we'll try that.
All right. Fighting words.
Fighting words are words that would incite you or arouse anger in a person and cause you to want to, do something bad or punch somebody or something.
That's essentially it. Yeah. It's one of the things that's not protected free speech under the First Amendment.
Do you know what you call slander that is spoken of a peer or other great man?
Slander that is spoken of a peer or an other great man. No, I don't.
Scandalum magnatum. Those are probably Latin words, but I don't really know.
And I don't think that actually fits underneath this our legal briefs laws here. That I don't think that word was ever spoken during this portion of. You're just going through looking at your notes.
I have leftover words. Notes I didn't use. I wanted to get that word in there. That was a pretty good word, wasn't it? Well, scandalum magnatum. And what I think is interesting is it's only if it's spoken of a peer or other great man. You can say that about people that aren't as good as you or something like that. I don't know how you define that, but that was only applied to peers or people who are better.
You can take your labrum scapulum and just do whatever you want with it. I'll find something real good for you in a minute.
And you know, there's another thing that's if you accuse someone of having bad disease, a communicable disease, that's something that you can be construed as defame, as you're defaming them.
A loathsome disease.
Yeah,
defamation per se.
But you say that they had a disease but were cured of it, then you're not defaming them because there's no real injury because they don't have it, so they don't suffer the same damages.
What?
Yeah. If you say they had the disease but they don't have it anymore.
Okay.
You're okay. You can say that.
Oh, I thought most of the loathsome diseases, and I haven't really tried to list out what they are, but I didn't think most of them. I thought most of them
were. I'll know one when I get it.
I don't know what I'll list.
When I see it, what the hell is this? Isn't that the standards all those judges are using? I'll know it when I see it.
I don't know.
This is a scandalous disease by any measure.
I don't know.
I'm going to the doctor tomorrow.
I don't know if this is a loathsome disease. I'll know it when I see it. That's a good standard. I like that. I wish more judges would apply that. It's, we hope you enjoyed this podcast. I guess
we did.
Yeah, we had a good time. You know how if it's
I overstudied. My brain hurts.
Yeah, lawyering's hard.
Lawyering's hard work. I heard a guy named Mike Mehta say that once when he was studying for his law exam.
Did I actually say that?
Yeah. Being a lawyer's hard.
Makes my head hurt.
And you promptly went out and got on your surfboard and went surfing.
Well, that sounds about right.
Had to unwind, huh?
That's right. Work it out. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Court Appointed. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Strong. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.